Space is supporting or enabling a number of the SDGs that you mentioned. I mean, we have 17. There are proposals for even having space as the 18th SDG. Are there various activities and initiatives out there to bring it to the table? Because we are so heavily depending on it, and we have to clarify, or we have to set our rules to, yeah, not make a mistake that we will regret sooner or later. Because I mean, you mentioned this, the space junk or there's the space debris. We have the situation with the oceans, and then it's not that extreme, but I mean, we over years, over decades, we polluted the oceans, and now we surprisingly see that even the fish that we are catching from the sea has the microplastics, and it has an effect in the entire or circle or on the ocean. So also we have these massive islands, and I don't know what the size is now, are of garbage which are just there. And I mean, that is absolutely frightening. And we start to do that, it's the same in space.
Boston Cleaning is my guest on this episode of Inside Ideas, brought to you by 1.5 Media and Innovators Magazine, publisher of Space Watch Global, a Thor Group GmbH brand. Thorsten is the CEO and is a business development executive with an academic and professional experience in space management, satellite communications, and broadcast technology. He has an electrical and telecommunications engineering background and studied information technology and computer science at the Technical College of Berlin. Thorsten began his career as a software developer before moving into sales management and business development, working at companies including 3Com, Lucent Digital, Video, SES, Astra, Bertelsmann, and PTS Scientists. A proud Berliner with a global outlook, Thorsten expanded his horizons even further by attending the International Space University and earning an executive MBA. His ISU thesis analyzed capacity building visions and opportunities of countries in the Gulf region, and he brings experience developing strong and lasting business relationships with Middle Eastern countries. At Spacewatch Global, Thorsten is putting his business acumen to good use in his operations and business development role, specializing in international partnerships and information analysis. He has been instrumental in successfully identifying new market opportunities and takes pride in building strong customer relationships that benefit all partners, combining his business intelligence with an ability to understand complex technical information from the market and clients. Since the beginning of 2020, he hosts a series of space cafes virtually. His weekly space cafe web talk, 33 minutes with different guests. He hosts high-level actors in the space community for an in-depth talk. He also produces the bi-weekly Space Cafe podcast hosted by Marcus Muslechna. In 2021, the Space Cafes branched out to various regions of the world. Thorsten, thank you for giving me the short bio, because I know it could be much longer because you've been doing this for quite some time. You have a plethora of background. Welcome to the show.
Mark, thank you very much for having me. It's a great pleasure to being here. And although I would say, when you have an extensive bio, then you're just being old. Experienced.
No,
let's
no,
put it that way.
No,
no. We all are experienced.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm definitely old, but no, you've just got a plethora of experience, and it's so nice. Our paths have crossed many times. We know each other from MLove, Future.io, Kinternet, H-Farm, many, many other locations. The last time we saw each other live was at DLD in Munich at 2020, so yeah. Before the pandemic really hit and got underway. And we had a nice talk there. You had a nice, I don't know, as a plenary or panel discussion there at DLD, which was beautiful, and did some fabulous things. So I want to jump right into it. So we have been through hell. We've experienced the COVID, the pandemic, all this craziness, all your years of experience, all what you've done, what you've learned, kind of with this strong focus on space, the future innovations that are really, really meant to bring us into better futures and get us out of crazy situations like this. In some respects, if you drill down to it, how have you weathered this time? Did you have any resilience? Tell me your personal experiences and aha moments during this time.
That's a big question, but I think what we experience right now to overcoming the pandemic is a good use of space technology in our daily life. That we talk here together in this setup, I wouldn't say it's something that comes from space, not at all. It's invented here on Earth, but it has strong sales components in it. So the entire timing for most of the services we use comes from space. So, and how did we do? We run a digital platform, and we see a rising moment in the pandemic because people stay home, but there's still a hunger to know what's going on. And I think also we see that as a hunger for higher quality information, not the usual one that you get from the yellow press. Sure, that's something that most people need also to digest, but yes, and that's what we particularly see, are a hunger for high quality information and or also interactive formats. I mean, like what we do right now, people like to consume with all their senses, whatever is possible. I mean, the only thing what we miss at the moment is to hug each other, to have a drink or next to each other and experience this kind of social life. But all the rest, I think we can feed that quite well. So, yeah, we are surviving in this environment with the pandemic. And I mean, Germany is heading now the third lockdown or so. I mean, it's obviously not avoidable. We will see how long that will take. But satellite technology, the use of satellites, the protection of assets in space is something we are big advocates for.
I want to drill down even deeper. You personally, did you have to make any pivots as we got into the first lockdown, into the pandemic, to kind of move forward? And is that how some of Space Cafe and Space Watch emerged, or were you totally prepared? You were saying, oh, I've done this for years and we could go. I just want to dive even deeper and kind of pull out what's happened with you and want some of the great successes, even though we were in a pandemic.
Great point. And no, I didn't have a blueprint for that, to be honest. So I just adapted to the situation and made the best out of it. And I mean, as you mentioned before, we have seen each other over in the course of the last years on so many occasions and so many places of the world. I was a frequent traveler, and the last year was the first year after the wall came down. So for those that want to calculate back, it's quite a while ago. So it's the first year that I haven't taken a single flight. And I have to say, hey, I'm still alive. And sure, you have to rethink about all this travel arrangement before and mirror that a bit. But the question was, so how did we manage with that? The Space Cafes was a physical interaction with people we had twice in Berlin before. And we said, hey, why don't we get it online? Because we arranged a nice contract or a nice setting beginning of last year with a big telecom operator here in Germany to use their facility in Berlin to offer these space cafes a few times a week. And then pandemic hit us. So we said, do we stop now? Do we wait until it's over? But hey, when will that happen? So nobody had an idea. And we said, nope, we just go online like everyone else. But then you can't take physical formats one-to-one into online formats because, I mean, we all are Zoomified or over the last year with 2-hour and beyond panels with dozens of people where even as a panelist, you're bored to death because your FaceTime is limited to 3 minutes, but then you have to sit 2 hours in front of a camera with smiling and you can't do anything else than being there. So, and I think we have to adapt with this new situation and find formats that are exciting for people and are engaging at the same time. So, I mean, you know what happened when you have 100 people in a Zoom room and try to interact with them and everybody can speak or it doesn't work. Yeah. So the format we have developed or thought of was a short format, 33 minutes, in-depth talk with somebody on a topic my guest is interested in. And what I always say is I'm inviting my guest virtually to my terrace to have a drink, have a conversation on a space topic, what is close to his or her heart, and then dive into that. And we let our audience participate in that and then interacting with us, with sending in their questions, and then we take them into that. But 33 minutes, it is, not longer. So, and that's obviously pretty appealing for people. And I mean, we run now over 50 shows. We run it for a year now, weekly, so over 50 shows and well recognized.
That's great to hear. I'm glad to hear it. I want to know a little bit more too, because I do a show on Clubhouse every Tuesday evening around food. And I wanted to find out, I've seen you there. You're also doing I think it's a form of either Space Cafe or Space Watch. What are you finding about that new platform and how is that going? Is there a lot of space enthusiasts or people on Clubhouse that are interested in these topics?
Absolutely. I mean, these are the new kids on the block. I mean, it's something what appeared last year and obviously made its way through the world. And I mean, we skipped TikTok. I still don't know how to use it and what it's for, but however, I have a hard time to understand the use of Instagram, but okay. And Clubhouse, I said, yeah, that looks pretty interesting because it's audio only, it's not recorded. So, and you have an interaction with people. And what we do, and you pointed to that, after our 33 minutes, we do an extra 33 minutes, and that's actually also how we call it, Space Cafe, an extra 33 minutes on Clubhouse to either engage with our guest or to engage with the audience, what they think about it, if they have other questions. And so, because it's a more informal talk than we have it on Zoom, because we also record our talks or our dialogues and archive them and make them available for later usage. And on Clubhouse, it's fluid. It's gone when it's set. And there are definitely a number of our space people are on Clubhouse. Are there, I mean, every day ongoing space discussions are on various levels. And it also opened us to a new audience. And that's an interesting side effect. So, I mean, we all have the point of, hey, how do we engage with more people, with other people? Our followership is great. And we have 2/3 of people that are coming back to our space cafes. Yeah, after they have been there, they're coming back and they are on the list to get the next announcement and all of that. But how to engage with new ones? How to do the next leap, how to really exponential grow. And I think Clubhouse is for us at the moment an experiment. I mean, we're doing it just on somebody else's platform. That's also something you have to take into account. And it's not there forever. So it's for the moment. And it is good to communicate with people, but at the moment, I think from a business point of view, we all have the same question marks in our eyes. Yeah.
Yeah. I want to kind of go in a little bit more on is it all in English? Is it mixed between German and English, or both Space Watch and Space Cafe?
For Space, the universal language is English, or without any doubt. So we publish on our website everything in English. I mean, we started at one stage with a Russian section that didn't turn out that well. Maybe we've been too early. But on Clubhouse, we do it all in English. Also, the Space Cafe 33 Minutes are in English. We started earlier this year with, as you mentioned earlier, branching out the Space Cafes into the regions. So Australia, Brazil, Germany, Netherlands is coming up, or Russia. And these are in local languages. And why are we doing it? We want to do something for the community in these countries. Because if we talk about global space, it is important, no doubt, because space is not something you can divide for country by country. So we need this global dialogue, but we also need to address the people in the countries that might not be able to speak English. So, for instance, the Space Cafe Russia is in Russian. So Elena Morozova, she's the executive secretary of InterSputnik. She is hosting guests, and her first guest, Olga Volinskaya, is a space lawyer. And so they spoke about the application of space law in Russia in Russian. And it was a huge success. I mean, I tried to understand what they're talking. Was hard for me.
Yeah.
I couldn't catch up with it. But I mean, we got absolute positive feedback, and we do it the same in Portuguese, in Brazil. Canada is coming up, Scotland, UK is all in English. Even the Netherlands will be in English. Germany, we have done in German, because we have a huge community in Germany that is also not able to speak English or a proper English. So we hosted, our host for Germany, Andreas Schepers, hosted Dr. Walter Pelzer, the head of the DLR. And they spoke about space, new space, launchers, micro launchers, North Sea, and so on, in German, to a German audience. So
I want to get into a couple things now that you've brought that up, the international communities. And I want to focus in on two areas and see, you know, what you've heard, or what you're, because you have your finger on the pulse, and what you've heard of or observed. First of all, Russia, with the now, you know, pretty much the U.S. space race with Tesla and Virgin Galactic and others, Jeff Bezos, Blue Origin, has pretty much gone over to the privatization. NASA's given the contract to Musk and that. How has that affected the Sputnik program, Russia? What is their next phase? What is their future? Are they collaborating? Is that something? Because they were the ones, just up until recent, taking us up to the space station. So I'd like to know what kind of insights, what's the future for them, and how that's affected them from what you've found out so far.
Absolutely. And I have to say, after the Sputnik program, many things happened also in Russia. So, Russia went through massive changes in the entire structure. So are the departure of the USSR. Now we have the sovereign countries there. A lot of the space technology is more or less divided by Ukraine, Russia, and Kazakhstan. So, and that is also, that. I mean, also the conflict, obviously, between Russia and Ukraine causes a number of challenges in the Russian space program. So, but what we see is that Russia is delivering a service, and Russia is doing their stuff. Yes, the Soyuz rocket is technology, which is 30 years proven, but it's doing the job. So how the future will look like, we will see. The new alliance is, and you might have seen that, there's an MOU underwritten by China and Russia about space exploration. So that could be an interesting, if you want, may say, frightening new development. But definitely we will see two blocks, at least two blocks, are even in our space development. And there's no doubt that the US government, military, private, is in the lead position. Yeah? But others will come. And I would say at the moment, Russia is doing their job, slow pace. I mean, all the budgets are down there as well. They have huge challenges on the economics and that influence the space program as well. But who we see is rising at the moment dramatically is China. Yeah? I mean, we cooperate with folks in China to get news, independent news from China. And just today, there was a huge announcement about a huge funding round for a new constellation from China on narrowband communication. So these things are happening right now. So we see a lot of also Russian technology is emerging or giving a base for the Chinese development or in space. And even so, China is not that far advanced, or it is on a way and on a very fast track right now.
Yeah, I think good, bad, or ugly, China's handing us our asses in many different ways. They're really showing us some examples in all different sectors. The other community that I wanted to discuss is India. So India did a launch and right before touchdown or during the touchdown process, lost communications. And then afterwards, not much was heard of, but it was a huge milestone. It was a huge thing for India as well to even get that far and to have that kind of a success to that. And a lot of missions fail. So, I mean, it's not saying anything that it failed, because there's many missions, even with Musk, that fail or they're learning, chalk it up to learning experience. What do you know about that community and the failures there, or some things that maybe, is there any discussions going on with that and the advancements there in India?
Absolutely. I mean, you were referring to their moon landers and the moon program. We have seen that the private initiative called emerging from the Google Lunar X Prize. So that was namely Israel, the Bereshit lander, who smashed on the, they had a hard touchdown on the lunar surface. Which was a bit unfortunate. And then shortly after, we have seen India's government or ISRO mission also not make it softly on the moon. So, but there will be in both countries new missions. And India also going for human space flight now with their own program. Our India opened slowly in the Indian style, very slow, to commercialize the market. So we see at the moment a high number of Indian startups in the space sector, also raising foreign money for them. I mean, Pixel is one of them. I mean, there's a huge community or New Space India called. It's worth to watch what comes out from there. And I mean, we know the Indian education system is quite well advanced. I mean, they have 2 million graduates every year coming out from the universities on IT or with IT studies. So, I mean, and they're going globally and then also coming back with bringing this knowledge home. And so there's nothing wrong with that. Yeah. But India is also to watch they have launch capacities. They showed, unfortunately, they showed their anti-satellite capabilities 2 years back, where they shoot down one of their own satellites. But I mean, India is operating also in a very geopolitical, very sensitive area. I mean, there are permanent conflicts with Pakistan. There's this tension with China in the north of India. And I mean, and we have to see all these circumstances to understand why there was this timing for an ASAT test. Even it created unnecessary debris and all of that, what came with it. And I mean, the scientists are, I mean, we were told, the press were told, oh, that was not a problem. It was such a low orbit that will deorbit within months. Yeah, a few years later, still we have fragments and objects are still in space. And that's one of the things that is very alarming. And you mentioned earlier the DLD in Munich earlier last year, where we had a panel on space situational awareness, space debris, to raise this awareness here on Earth that we are so heavily depending on space assets and the services we are getting from space that we can't risk these assets. And sure, the military has a different point on that to take, but all the commercial services, weather, Earth observation, I mean, all of that wouldn't be possible without the assets in space, plus positioning services. I mean,
yeah.
Are you still able to read a map if you've seen it? I mean, we are old enough, we had learned it, and we have been potentially Boy Scouts or in the army to train it and could navigate. But I mean, who of the young generation is able to read a map?
It's
why? Because exactly. Hey, I'm this blue dot here moving. So
there's a couple points that you brought up that I want to even go a little bit deeper into. And if they're touchy subjects, you just tell me. So first of all, you have your engineering background, your computer science degree. I do as well. But what's really interesting is the International Space University, your executive MBA that you have through there. With this type of almost moonshot degree or outer space thinking, there's a lot of forecasting. There's also a lot of planning, road mapping and future planning. Okay, how do we build something, engineer something? What's the science, the math to get us to this point, which is a time in the future, actually. It's a roadmap timeline plan to get us there, which all, whether it's private, whether it's India, whether it's Sputnik, it's Russia, it's whoever it is, they're all doing these things that are really, especially the great things that have happened with Mars lately, they're all, many months, much planning and adjustments along the way. Mm-hmm. That's the tools and the business model or the way to think to get there. But now I want to go into the hard question. On the ground, a lot of these private companies or these programs, we talked about India and the moon landing. You were involved in PT Scientist, which stands for part-time scientist. Wonderful thing. I saw the lander, the rover at H Farm, and we've talked about it before. I guess you could say great partners or great collaborations. But there's almost a bastardization or something where it goes wrong along the way with when we get into some of these, people want to put their logo or their brand on things. And the true reason of what you want to do or what you want to accomplish kind of gets in the way. And first of all, just, if you don't mind, tell us about the beautiful, wonderful things about PT Scientists and how you got involved and started with that. And then also why you decided this is not right. There's something wrong here, which we're not just seeing with PT Scientists, we're seeing in other areas as well.
Mm-hmm. No problem at all. PT Scientists is part of my own history and heritage. So that's not something I regret, definitely not, because it was a cool thing, and I will talk about it in a second. So what was PT Scientist, PTS, part-time scientist, as you mentioned. So they were one of the teams or that were participating in the Google Lunar X Prize. And the Google Lunar X Prize was, to recalculate, I think, set up 12, 14 years ago, something like that. 2007. So it's 14 years ago, yeah. By Peter Diamandis and his team, and they got Google on board. And that was an X Prize following the Ansari X Prize, where we had seen the first commercial companies going to suborbital, Virgin Galactic and X-Core and all of those. So the next one was then the moonshot. So the X Prize was fly privately to the moon, have a vehicle with you, or uncrewed, have a vehicle with you, drive 500 meters, send an HD video back, and I think an 8-minute HD video back, and you will get also $10 million or $20 million for that. So, I mean, if somebody offers you $10 million or $20 million, I think that's an amount for both of us that is, wow, that's a lot. If you do a moonshot, you know, it might leverage a bit. So, I mean, how does it cost to fly something to the moon? Definitely more than 20 million. I mean, that's without spoiling, that's what I can say. So, but at least it was a drive. And what happened is that I think 35, 37 teams worldwide came together and were in this race, starting with rovers, starting with landers. So, and what we see today, we have a number of leftovers or emerging companies out of this team. So one of them was PT Scientist in Berlin, run and founded by Robert Böhme and his team. And they created also a great partnership with Audi, so that the rover was then rebranded in the Audi Lunar Quadro to have to bring the four rings to the moon. And what you have seen was one of the models we built. We built a spacecraft we designed a spacecraft called Alina, autonomous landing and navigation module, to fly to the moon, to land, and to also have payload. And payload means really other people, other companies, other organizations, or experiment and stuff to the moon. So we also worked with companies like Vodafone, Red Bull, and Omega, and so on. And that was a great experience. And they approached me because I've done a lot of business and work in the Middle East with their space programs and their initiatives. And so at one of their trips to the Middle East, they approached me if I could help them. And so I jumped on a plane, went with them to Doha at that point of time. And the rest is history. They asked me to come on board and work with them. And then I ended up to being their chief commercial officer and afterwards chief business officer, which was a great time. But I also learned then that moonshots we can't take moonshots for granted. I mean, you need an idea, you need a bold vision. I mean, Elon Musk, is the anchor that we all have seen, or the role model we all have seen here. I mean, the Falcon 1 failed, after three failures, he came up with a contract with the US or I think Air Force, created the Falcon 9, and he succeeded. I mean, also with a number of their his innovations, like reusing first stages, which was impossible to imagine for the established agencies and the established players. I mean, I'm old enough in this, or long enough in this market, to have been in this panels that people say, no, that doesn't work, never ever we can do that, and that doesn't make sense. I mean, Elon has proven us all wrong, for these ideas. I mean, he failed for the first three whatever landings. Even, I mean, I think earlier this year he failed a landing of a booster. But so what? I mean, he landed, 50 of them in the bullseye already. And Yes, what we see right now are these enormous speed with the Starship development. Yes, their hopping tests are not successful. And I mean, the last one landed and then exploded shortly after, what is also not cool. But I mean, it's just a matter of time. And I think SN 10, 11, whatever, is on the rollout already. So he's building it in an incredible faster cycle. And what we learned from that is that these things are possible, but you need something, and that's money, resources, you need the talents, you need the right partners. And for PT Scientist, it didn't work out. So, and then there was an insolvency coming, and I said, I have to move on. I mean, I can't stay that any longer. And so,
It's definitely a hard area to be in, but I think that was there anything with these logo placements or anything with you thought you had people on board that were supportive, but it's really wasn't enough funding to get you to where you need to be or enough drive to stick with that full amount of time, that really truly future vision of where it needs to go? Or can you put your finger on anything, or you think that's you're glad to be moved on and you don't want to talk about it anymore?
No, I mean, these are questions that I ask myself. I mean, these were questions I asked myself while I then departed, and also still are retrospective. So are why didn't we succeed, and why do we see today companies like Astrobotic or so are a competitor in this market or in this race earlier, is not surviving. I wouldn't say succeeding, but succeeding in terms of they raised money from NASA, they got access to technology, to really to the helping hand and the resources to make that possible. I mean, we see at the moment, I think 3 or 4 companies, iSpace included from Japan, also now moving to the US, open an office there. We have Intuitive Machine. So they all, and of course, Team America, led by Blue Origin, yeah, that are heading to the moon. So, but they all are, take off Blue Origin or from that equation, but all the others, they need the funds from NASA, and NASA dedicated a program called CLPS, Commercial Lunar Payload Services, worth I think $2.6 billion with the last administration to the moonshots, to going back to the moon and to stay also as commercial entities. And Europe wasn't there at that point of time, and it's still not. Yeah, I mean, if you see the investment situation in terms of space in Europe, or particular in Germany, then when you go to somebody and say, "Hey, we want to build an infrastructure on a moon, and that is in our telecommunication network or a power network or so on," I would say questioning looks are the least what you can earn from it. I mean, you know that you go out and talk how to make this world a better place, and people say, "Yeah, but wow, that's a bold idea." And then, I can't go further into the details, and I don't want. I've taken for me the decision to say it's time to move on.
It's a beautiful learning lesson, definitely.
Oh yes,
and so much knowledge and growth out of it. And but there's also, I mean, I'm 2-3 times removed from anything that you're involved in, but I see it with a different lens. I also see, you know, the big commercialization. I see the branding, the logos. I see the prizes, whether it's the X Prize or other prizes out there that are pushing for new innovations and drives and collaboration. But those monies that they give in the prizes are just a fraction of what's actually needed to get there. And so that there is still this whole separate thing that has nothing to do with getting to space, with getting anything landed, that is a whole machine in and of itself of raising money and continually keeping that cash flow so that the company can focus in on its R&D, on its innovation, getting the projects to space. So my hat's off to you, and I was always pulling for you. I'm glad you moved on and found other ways, and now you're meeting with all the great people and having wonderful conversations. So Space Watch Global is this digital magazine and portal for those interested in space and far-reaching impact space development has on our world. In that, I'm sure you get to talk to the superstars and get the great insights, but do you go a little bit further and actually get into the nitty-gritty? Where are the systemic problems? Where are the futures going? Where you know, not just, oh, we've got the superstar here, just came back from ISS space station or whatever, and it's the starstruck type of conversations. What would you say out of all your 50 talks that you've had, would you say, wow, that was enlightening, so something that I just didn't know was going to come and out of these conversations that I say, that's that you've got to listen to that as something that changes your view on the space race or the space watch period.
Absolutely. And I mean, all of these just talks that we had, or every single one is for me on this level to say, wow, worth to listen. I mean, yeah, 50 times 30 minutes is are a severe amount of time that you have to spend to listen to all of them, but they all had to say something. So, but to back to your point, we are definitely not cheerleaders for one of the big innovators we have in this market. The first thing what differentiates us as a platform, as a magazine, is we are Switzerland-based, we are per se independent and neutral. So we are not following a specific market or a specific agenda of a country, a nation, an institution. So that is absolutely important to mention. Because with this independence, we also have the liberty to have a separate view on things. So we are advocating at the moment a lot for our space situational awareness, space traffic management, for regulations and implementation of rules and laws on the international level. I mean, we have the Outer Space Treaty that rules our behavior in space, but then when you come to the details, then I wouldn't say it's weak, but it didn't have the foresight to implement all of these things that are needed today. I mean, good example, two years back, the UN COPIUS, that is the Committee of the Peaceful Use of Outer Space, and has 95 countries are in COPIUS right now. COPIUS came up with the adaptation of 25 LTS, long-term sustainability guidelines for behavior in outer space. What does it mean? I'm not interfering with somebody. I'm deorbiting my stuff when it's not used anymore, and so on and so forth. So it goes in really big details. The adaptation of the 21 guidelines took 10 years. I would say we don't have these 10 years to implement them anymore. And the implementation is obviously then nation. Are the nation's obligation. Are they doing it? Are they implementing all? Just a few of them. So there is no rule set for that. And I mean, look at Europe. We have in Europe a few countries which are having assets in space, does not have a space law, including Germany. Also the space laws and the space policies in the various countries in Europe are differentiated from each other. So in Luxembourg, under the Luxembourgish law, you can appropriate resources in outer space. So in others you can't, because many of us think it violates the Outer Space Treaty. All of that is not clear. I mean, at the moment we are debating, and that's definitely something where I say we are not cheerleaders. We're seeing Starlink launching, or SpaceX launching the Starlink fleet almost every second week. So that means we count at the moment 1,300 Starlink satellites in space, which is over one third of the active satellites that we have held in one man's hand. So, and how many satellites does it need to make one specific orbit?
12,000 for Starlink, I think they were.
That's forecasted. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, but even with the almost 1,000, I mean, if you want to place your satellite in a specific orbit, and this orbit is taken without, I mean, you can't appropriate an orbit. But if you put your fleet up there, it's taken by definition. So, and that causes a lot of harm for others. I mean, we have all these assets in space, and I mean, imagine we will depend our, I mean, we spoke about cyber threats or the last week in my space cafe with one of the experts, José Achache from Switzerland. And we spoke about internet from space. Why do we need that? I mean, in most cities we have a wired connection, or we have a great mobile network which is capable. But what all of these lacking are rural areas and wider areas as well. And we need it for autonomous driving, autonomous vehicle, not just driving, everything what will move autonomous. So we need a reliable system, also supported by space assets. So now the geopolitical, or the soft power comes into play. If you're a private owner of such a network and a fleet of your cars is depending on these assets, it is good if they're in one hand. So the car company, Tesla, and Starlink. So that is a match. But what about Volkswagen? I mean, there are articles out in the press that Volkswagen is thinking about building their own constellation or jumping on the Starlink constellation with their autonomous fleet. But what does it imply when your competitor owns the platform, and can you get down your fleet with a fingertip? So how dangerous, how difficult is that? And that's just on the car side. I mean, there are other aspects in the equation as well. I mean, that led Europe, or Thierry Breton, the EU commissioner, earlier this year to this statement: we need our own independent satellite constellation for Europe. So few may argue, oh, we don't need it, we can use another one, but it is a question of sovereignty. It's a question of why do we have an Ariane or a rocket in Europe, even if it's so expensive. Yes, we need this independent access to space, because otherwise we are depending. And in Germany, we see it in the North with the entire discussion we have on a geopolitical level with Nord Stream 2. We see pipeline from Russia. And the pressure Germany, the German government, and the companies involved get from the American side. So is that correct? I would say no. But who am I to judge on that? But it does not feel right. So
it's amazing where to go from how there are so many things that, I mean, definitely I recommend to all my listeners to go out, and especially if they're, I have quite a few space enthusiasts, to go out and listen to your podcast and go to Space Watch and the Space Cafe as well. We'll list all those links in the show notes and descriptions. You kind of tickled upon it as well. So Copia is a UN based project, just like Corsia is a UN based project for air traffic and carbon. But there are these wonderful things around the United Nations where nations have started to think about, you know, not just air travel, not just space travel. They're thinking this global bigger picture. Yeah. And yeah, they're slow, and there's a whole nother plethora of issues there. But there are things already out there, but most of us don't even know about it. I bet you not even 1% of my listeners would say, oh, I knew about Copia. And we've got a lot of techies that was kind of a UN instigated thing, or that it maybe came externally, and then the UN brought the nations together as a platform to speak about this. That's why it's important. It's almost this education, this awareness, this new phase of learning. And that's why the podcasts, the cafes, the things that we do are so vital, because it's not always that we get this real-time update of collective mm-hmm. intelligence of what's going on in our world, what some of these big stories, a lot of fake news, a lot of misinformation, a lot of just stuff that doesn't do a lot to keep your finger on the pulse of where our planet and humanity is going. And so within that, there's this other aspect. There's many SDGs or UN awareness that are also tied to space in general. And I don't know if you can kind of tell us some of the ones that you're working on and what your thoughts are as far as sustainability and resilience and this, you know, reusing movement that's going on in space, but then even maybe touch or tickle upon all the space junk. I know you have some information about the space junk or some views or people you've spoken to about this as well.
Oh, absolutely. Space is supporting or enabling a number of the SDGs that you mentioned. I mean, we have 17. There are proposals for even having space as the 18th SDG. Are there various activities and initiatives out there to bring that to the table? Because we are so heavily depending on it, and we have to clarify, or we have to set our rules to, yeah, not make a mistake that we will regret sooner or later. Because I mean, you mentioned this, the space junk or this is the space debris. We have the situation with the oceans, and then it's not that extreme, but we over decades we polluted the oceans, and now we surprisingly see that even the fish that we are catching from the sea has the microplastics, and it has an effect in the entire circle on the ocean. So also we have these massive islands, and I don't know what the size is now, are of garbage which are just there. And I mean, that is absolutely frightening. And we start to do that the same in space. I mean, the intention of bringing up a satellite network, a satellite constellation to serve the world with internet, I would say that's something we all can understand and say, yeah, that's a great one. At the end, it is a business, yeah, to make money out of that. And then also with all that making business, keeping your competitors out and so on, being fast to market and so on and so forth. So, but the sustainability is something what is addressed more and more, but it's not heard, in my opinion. And we advocate, or we don't have a paywall. We don't put our content behind anything where you have to go and pay for information. So we try to make ourselves SDG number 4 compliant as best as possible, that everyone who visits our website can access the same information. There is no geo-blocking or other methods that we use. The information is available for everyone, and it's very important that everyone can access the same level and make its own mind up. That's also very important. It's not that I'm saying we have the solution for everyone. No, we offer ideas, we offer sources, and people have to use their own mind to come up with their own solutions. And I think one thing is good with space excites people. Space drives innovation. Space is something you get a smile in your face. I mean, it starts with this stuff around this Legos, where kids, even adults, are having really big eyes while building it and putting it together and just having fun with it. And that is great. I mean, we all grew up with whatever, depends on the philosophy, or Star Wars or Star Trek. But however, it has an impact on us. And the good thing is, if we try to solve something for space, it has an effect on Earth. But we should ask ourselves, why don't we solve things on Earth first before doing it in space? Or why do we have to use something to play wire space to come back? I mean, so many innovations were made for space. We are using day in, day out on Earth. I mean, and it's not Teflon. That is one of the myths that we have. But canned food or the heart monitoring and so on. And you have huge offices at NASA, at ESA, at JAXA that are doing spin-outs. So these technologies, these patents are available, you can use them. So and to make a product out of it. And I think that's great. So we have this wealth of knowledge, we just have to use it in the right way. And I mean, the ISS is an not self-sustaining organism, but they try to reuse as best as they can all the resources they have. And that's air, that's water, and so on and so forth. And I think, I mean, we are blessed living in Hamburg or in Berlin or in many places or around the world with clean air, with our clean air, green environment. So, but we, as you know better than I, we are messing it up in big scale, and we have to stop talking and take actions. And I think that's very important. And we try to foster this dialogue that goes into this area. So I mean, none of us has the resources to say, hey, let's. None of us are in our company has the resources to really get things done in a big scale, but at least we can foster these ideas and inspire people to think in this direction. And that's why we do these dialogues. That's why we do the podcast. That's why we do the daily news reporting or features and put them out. And we hope we will not give up on that.
No, I'm sure you won't, and I'm rooting for you. I had Lynn Kaiser on the show and did a podcast which just released today. You're going to have him on your show or already planning him. A super guy, also has a little ties to space, but his way of production using AI and 3D printing to do new rocket boosters, new technologies that can be used on reusable or quickly printed locally in a very efficient way, which in some respects kind of is taking AI and doing even a twist on biomimicry, kind of to get up the right shapes and the right things needed. So I'm excited to watch and listen to that. I know you'll have a wonderful time. He's also very big in environment and sustainability and this as well. I know you are as well. And so that really leads me to two of my hardest questions for you. We've talked a lot about communities and specific countries who are dealing with space, and like they're all kind of divided in their own regions or conflicts or areas mm-hmm. that they can work in, and they're not really guided by any global or universal laws or principles, although they exist or they're there in to some respects, but because of other boundaries and divisions or conflicts that they're kind of discombobulated, so to say. So my first hard question for you is, do you feel like you're a global citizen, and how would you feel about a world without nations, borders, divisions of humanity one from another, and this type of thinking of maybe having a a global operating system, one that worked for all of us.
You mentioned earlier, I'm call myself a proud Berliner. That's correct, I am. But first of all, I'm a European holding a German passport and living in Berlin. And that what is some that's something that, that makes me absolutely proud, and that's something I'm fight for. I think having a unified Europe is one of the biggest achievements in the last 70, 80 years that we had on our continent. And I see it with high level of concern, all these nationalistic approaches that we see in all countries. It's not something only in Germany. I mean, see Poland, see France, see Italy, see, you can name them all. And that's for me concerning. It has for me a lot to do with education. It has to do with solidarity, and has to do with where we come from. And I mean, I can say, and I'm open about it. I mean, I grew up in East Berlin before the wall came down. So, and I experienced just life there for over 20 years. That is something I don't want to miss. I don't want to have back. There is no glorification in, oh, that was so cool in the East. There were some elements that were not bad, no doubt. Yeah, and maybe a centralized education system is better than a federal than we have right now. But the greatest asset is that we have a democracy and everybody has a voice. So we have nobody who tells us what to think. So we are free individuals, free humans. Will we be that forever? I don't know. I hope we will. But we see other trends as well. So that is for Europe. I'm not there to say I'm a global citizen. Yes, of course, I'm part of this world. But at least I think I need to bounce somewhere. And that is Europe for me. Sure, traveling the world, going to the US, yeah, you feel okay. Going to Canada, you have a much better feeling home. Going Australia, you say, wow, cool, yeah, I can imagine to live here, but roots are somewhere else. So I think we have to try to emerge onto this higher level. And I wouldn't say I'm too old, but I'm not there yet. I'm on the European level, yeah. And I try to support solutions that help us are to become really global citizen. But I fear it's just an illusion for us, and we will not see it in our lifetime. And making the connect to space, if I see or if I hear Elon and his ambition to go to Mars, I say, yeah, wow, that's pretty cool. Somebody who drives it, who drives innovation. But when the next sentence is then, yeah, but we will not accept taking our rules from the world to Mars, I start questioning, or we are using our own currency on Mars, which is then Bitcoins also. That is where I think we have to work on, and we have to work on before it's too late. So in the entire dialogue we have for new governance systems on Moon, on Mars, yeah, these are highly relevant and highly important. Even there, out of space for most of us. But if we don't have an agreement on governance on the Moon, we will take our problems, our conflicts from Earth just to another place. And might be the Moon in the first instance, may it be Mars later on, or wherever our destiny will be in the future. And that's not good.
You really touch upon something. So you mentioned Star Trek earlier. Now you're talking about what's the operating system, the governance system, what's the currency on the Moon or Mars? We don't take the same problems or the same systems from Earth and apply them there. In Star Trek, they had their own economics. We call it Trekonomics. So I'm a big Star Trek fan, and also Star Wars and all the other space odysseys, movies, you know, that showed these sci-fi depictions of the future. Star Trek had its own economy. It was called Trekonomics. It was one based on, not on monetary system, but there was a rare mineral that sometimes they talked about that they needed. But overall, people weren't making a certain wage or credits for the jobs that they did, yet they were engineers and doctors and security and on, clear to bartenders, to psychologists, to communications officers. But they weren't making the regular dollar, you know, but yet those were highly sought after positions to be on certain things. And there's a whole book written on it. Trekonomics is the name of it, actually. And it's absolutely fabulous. This goes back to the question of global citizen and a world without nations, borders, divisions of humanity, one for another. What if we had a new global operating system for the Earth, one that worked for all of humanity, where we raised the bar higher and said, okay, we're never going to let humanity suffer below this level again. No poverty, no hunger, no basic needs, the not universal basic income, much different and much higher. And then, yeah, we're going to still have problems, but we've just set the bar higher on a global level to agree humanity one with another. Being someone, myself and you, who think and deal a lot with outer space and Mars and Moon and about the innovations and technologies, it's really funny because in that respect, if there were aliens, if we do make it back, or if we do make it to Mars or the Moon, back to the Moon and set up a colony there, will those people look back at Earth and say, boy, look at those crazy guys. They can't even get along together, yet they're all the same species. Why are they fighting against them? If an alien were to visit our planet, they'd say, aren't you guys all the same species? Why are you fighting against each other? What's the difference? We don't even have a unifying operating system for our planet. And I think the reason I sparked that question is we're all breathing the same air. We're all drinking the same water. It's all circulated on our planet. The species don't have borders. The COVID and Corona doesn't have any borders. It doesn't stop at the border. And so we're lacking a unified new operating system, in my opinion. I think all over the Earth, we're seeing this civil unrest. We're seeing a dis-ease at the current operating systems and models and governments and things that they're just not working for us all anymore. And that's why we see difficulties with inaugurations. We see difficulties with Black Lives Matters. We just very recently was in Atlanta, the Asians that were killed and brutally murdered because of a racial issue. In some respects, we haven't evolved too much from the Neanderthal, yet we're talking about space. And so we need to get together and unify somehow on a new system that works for us all. And that really leads me to my hardest question for you today, and it is the burning question, WTF, and you've heard it before. It's not the swear word. It's really, what's your vision? What's your understanding of where do you think we're going? What's the future, Torsten?
I'm an optimist by heart, sometimes with a pessimistic outfit, and I know that but at the moment, I do have a hard time to envision a positive future for us if we stay on this track where we are. I'm asking most of my guests the same. What is their view on our future in space as humans? And the answers are as diverse as you can imagine. We will have an summit in preparation where we will discuss a few of those future models that we can envision in space. So from an Elysium type to we all go there and love each other and are having a good time on Mars, Moon and wherever. But I think it's not that likely that we will be there. And I think we have to radical, and you talked about the global governance system. We have to make radical changes of our relationship to appropriation of goods, of land, of property. I mean, that's what is the base for our rule set that we have in the various countries. And I think that's also the base for many of the conflicts on resources, on economic challenges. I mean, that's why we have migrants. It's war or economic drive or climate change or something else that comes into this equation now. So, but with the current system, I don't see where that will go. I mean, we have seen last year, we have seen evolvement of the Artemis Accords and the Artemis Project. And when you see that from the outside, you say, wow, yeah, Artemis going back to the moon with commercials and other countries. But what it is for me, and that's how I see it, it's legal in its structure without any doubt. But I think it's not a good approach, because it's one country leading or their way to the moon, okay, inviting others, but based on their rules on their rule set. So I mean, if you apply to the Artemis rules, you can be part of that. So, but that's of course exclusive, and that's not the spirit that we would see from the UN or from UNOSA, the United Nations Office of Outer Space or Space Affairs, or COPIOS. So, and because these fora are consensus driven, and yes, it is questionable, can we reach consensus today on these major topics? Also something where we need to put some efforts in. What bottom line is, our technology is evolving so fast. And that's not just space technology, it's AI. It is all these it's new algorithms that we see with that. That's quantum technology that we hardly can manage and understand. But it will sooner or later have its own conscious, its own being. So, and I think then we are in scenarios that we don't want to see. Will we experience that? I don't know. But I mean, having a look at to China on their social profiling, I don't feel comfortable with that applying here in Europe, where we, coming from the East, just got our freedom, our liberty to think what we want, to say what we want. And I'm not sure that we can answer all these fundamental questions. And about aliens, I like to refer to episode number 22 of our podcast. We had Avi Loeb, the Harvard professor, in our show, in the podcast. And Avi Loeb is the one who talked about Oumuamua, this object that came from outside our solar system and passed by and went away. And it had a shape very long, very thin, and made shadows. And he said that could be a starship from a foreign civilization. And the big question is, why didn't they had a look at us? And he said, are you looking at the ants on the street? No. I mean, who are we that we believe we are the top of the evolution? Are maybe there are other species, other forms of life that are more developed, and they're just ignoring us? And as you say, so looking at us and say, why are those guys fighting? Doesn't make sense, but let's move on. So, and I think, I mean, I don't have answers on these questions, and I can tell you it's sometimes it does not feel good not to have answers, but at least we are driven by the desire and the hunger to find answers, maybe not create answers by our own, but hear answers from others, adapt those, or and go into a dialogue. And that's the mission that we have for us defined. So we want to go out and foster this dialogue on various levels. And so the guests that I'm having are part of that conversation to go out. And it's also to address all these topics, space related, to the other 99%, which don't have a clue, which don't have an interest. For them, is Star Trek enough or Star Wars enough? But reality, I'm using my cell phone. Why do I need a GPS system? Yeah, because you're using your cell phone. You should be at least aware of it. You don't have to understand how it works. Yeah, you don't have to go into the chipset of the computer to understand what a computer can do for you. And but at least raising the awareness for why we spend our a few dollars on space or in EU or in the US, it's very important.
I absolutely love that. And it's not really about having the answers always, but it's nice to ask the question and kind of wonder, is there a better system or is there an answer, and kind of listen to all the different positive, whether it's space, whether it's sustainability, whether it's biodiversity, whether it's business, whether it's innovation, that we're kind of up to speed with the collective intelligence of humanity, wondering where is the model that we're currently operating on, no matter where we live, the model that, you know, is in Germany. If we push that model out into the future, is that one that will really take us to the future? Is it a model that's eventually going to collapse or is not very well set to get us to the future that we want to be in? So I like to just see that you are thinking about the question, that you're honest enough to say you don't have the answers, because I don't think any of us do. But there are some thought leaders out there that really have some plans, done some thinking about it, and presented different ideas and possibilities. Obviously, one of them is the Sustainable Development Goals, the Paris Agreement, the UN Accords for space and air travel, and other things that have kind of thought about, you know, where are we going? What do we need to have in the future to be prepared? There's the donut economics. There's the new Green Deal. There's, you know, there's some things definitely emerging. It's important that someone's looking out for that, because as you and I well know, we're going to be sorely disappointed if we're waiting for someone else or others to deliver the future for us. It definitely won't be what we want or what we think we expected. It'll be what they want and what they expected. And maybe that'll be good for us, but it might not. And so we need to get involved. We need to ask ourselves these questions. I only have three last questions for you before we end this. And they're really for my listeners. The first one is there, if there was one message that you could depart to my listeners that was a sustainable takeaway that had the power to change their life, what would it be, your message?
I mean, these are the big questions for wisdom to others. I'm not good at that, to be honest. I mean, what I say, if people ask me, hey, what can we do, is be yourself, be open to new ideas. And I mean, don't be hard cornered or in your thinking, be open. And I mean, moonshots exist. It's like black swans. I mean, moonshots just sounds better. And they exist. You just have to look for them, and you have to, also let them happen or initiate them by yourself. But my message is to each and all, be yourself, be honest, be transparent, and don't try to pretend somebody you are not. I mean, that's on a very personal level, of course, because I don't see myself to give bigger advice.
That's perfectly fine. And you're absolutely right. Black swans do exist, but also green swans exist. So I got cool. John Elkington's book, Green Swans, Ugly Ducklings Exist. Black swans with green feathers, or green swans with black feathers. There's gray swans. I want us to be aware that, you know, there's not always this gray area. There's not always this black and white. There is a diversity, just with, like with exponential or the future. There's two sides to that. There's a doom and gloom, a negative side, and then there's a very positive side. I think to be thinking about the question, or to be able to depart to listeners some advice or help or ways to look at things differently. And I get that from your show. I get that from your in-depth, wonderful answers you've given me today. But what should young innovators in space and in space watching and in computer science and space engineering and all those mm-hmm. things similar to what you're doing in your field be thinking about if they're looking for ways to make a real impact, or to get in, even their foot in to the door in this direction, so that they can be part of the journey that we're going, wherever it is?
I mean, first of all, we have to say everybody can find his or her place in the space industry. The space industry is not a place just for tech guys, just for engineers. You need all of them. And we touched on a few points earlier. You need lawyers. You need our people that are take care about food security. You need medical people. I mean, today we will not survive a flight to the Mars. We will die on our way. So how to set up a civilization when you're dying on your way? That is hard to imagine. So we have to find answers to that first. So, and how to get into this industry? Yeah, be open. I mean, there's so much going on. Our platform is just one element of this wide ocean of information that you can find. As a young or citizen, you can enter the or join the SGAC, the Space Advisory Council, Space Generation Advisory Council. So that was missing. A youth organization till 35 or till the age of 35, where you can engage yourself with one of the bigger programs. You have the ISU mentioned before, the International Space University, and many others. Luxembourg University has programmed. Berlin has a fantastic program on the engineering side for space, I have to say. Karlsruhe and so on and so forth here in Germany. And then you have these absolute fantastic universities in the States which offering great programs for space enthusiasts. So if there is a will, then there is a way. Yeah. And I mean, we are not living in a time where you get when you're born the blueprint how to live your life. So when you go to chapter 18, so what I'm doing this day, that doesn't exist. I mean, find your own way and work hard on it.
I love it. Thank you very much. What have you learned or experienced in your professional journey so far that you would have loved to know from the start?
Persistence. I mean, don't give up on your ideas. I mean, it's hard to, well, it's easy to find an idea, to run for it, and then also to drop it for whatever reason. That's easy. But to stay with an idea, to run for it, and I'm using running here again, not a good one, but I was a passionate marathon runner, and I've done it a couple of times. And running a marathon for somebody with my stature or our age is not a pleasure at all. I mean, you train for many months, and then you run it, and at least at kilometer 30, it's hard, and everything hurts, and then you're just pushed by the spectators or forward. But when you make it, that's really rewarding. I mean, all these endorphins, whatever it is, something cool happens in your body afterwards, and you're flying, you're over the moon. And that's something great. And that only can happen when you're not giving up. And my point is, for me, I adapted marathon, changed my life. Marathon running, marathon training changed my life, or in how I see things, how I deal with things. I mean, you can't win a marathon on the first mile because you're super sporty and you're running fast. No, you have to find your pace and you keep on going. You keep on going. Sure, a wise leadership or advice is sometimes look back if people are still following you. Otherwise, you're on your own. That is also something what I experienced a few times that at one point you are alone. You ask, hey, I was just running. Yeah, but a bit too fast for the rest. So again, monitor yourself. And this wisdom of age or to learn that before, that would be great. And yes, we all heard it before because our parents told us, our grandparents told us, but we haven't been listened to them because, hey, them, what do they know? They are just old. Yeah. But now we see, hey, yeah, maybe we had listened to them. But that's just on a side note.
Thank you so much, Torsten. It was wonderful. It was great to have you on the episode, and I hope we can do a follow-up again next year, and we'll stay in touch as we come out of these lockdowns and into the Great Reset. I really appreciate it, and you have a most excellent, wonderful day. Thanks for sharing and letting us inside your ideas.
Mark, thank you for having me.